We'll discuss race and how it plays a factor, and how we didn't even talk about this topic because we were afraid.
A Black Executive Perspective.
Welcome to BEP Live on the Black Executive Perspective podcast. I'm your host, Tony Tidbit. This is the station where we cut through the noise, get straight to what matter: power, politics, culture, leadership, and the moments shaping our lives right now. Guess what? This is going to be no filters, no safe takes, just honest dialogue and real accountability that we all want. So let's get into it, right? So listen, let's dive into what happened on Saturday. ICE agents shot and killed Alex Pretty, a U.S. citizen, registered nurse, and legal gun owner during an enforcement operation in Minneapolis. Federal officials say the shooting was an act of self-defense, but video footage and eyewitness accounts reviewed by multiple outlets show Pretty holding a phone, recording before being pepper sprayed, taken to the ground, and then shot. Tonight on BEP Live, we're not here to speculate. We're here to examine what happened, why the official accounts don't align, and what law says about the use of force, and what this case means for constitutional rights and public safety in America. Tonight, we're not going to do this alone. We have a couple of guests that are going to come on and share their perspectives as well. First, we have Keith Johnson, who's a trial attorney based in Augusta, Georgia, specializing in criminal defense. Keith has earned a national recognition as the top 100 trial lawyer in the United States, and his name as the Georgia Rising Star for 9 consecutive years. A former juvenile court judge, Keith also made history as the first Black male to serve as president of the Augusta Bar Association. He is founder and managing attorney for Keith Johnson, LLC. And then we also have Mark Jameson, who is a higher education professional in City University, New York, and founder of Kid Up Training, a firm focused on building skills and capacity across individuals, nonprofits, and organizations. My brothers, welcome to BEP Live.
Thanks for having us on, Tony.
Yep, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you too, and more importantly, thank you for being here, and we're looking forward to you sharing your perspectives on what happened. So real quick, you know, as we get ready to dive into this, because at the end of the day, you know, I'd love to get both of you guys' point of view of just how you felt when you saw what you saw. And start with you, Mark. We'll start with Mark first. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, definitely. Well, first, shock, right? I was scrolling social media at the time when it started breaking because, you know, we're getting ready for bad weather, cold stuff. And it was just another moment of thinking, one, about the tragedy of why it got here and how it got here. But second, how many times we have been here and that it takes another innocent life being taken for people to wake up and turn around and say, well, was this thing that I supported before actually what it is? Or maybe we should be doing something different. And for the voices that have been here raising that over a decade now, that we need to be paying attention to this movement. We need to be paying attention to the people who are now being hired. We need to know what's happening because we are seeing the weaponization of law enforcement. And we've known this for years and decades, but now we're seeing it against people who never thought it would be them. And it's not only sad, it's not only tragic, but now the question is, how will people respond? So when I saw it, I was in shock, but also not surprised, right? Because we've been seeing the steps that have been taken and knowing that it would escalate to this point. And so far, we know that at least 32 people have been killed by ICE, right? And counting.
Yeah. 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 Thanks, my friend. Keith, your thoughts?
It's just been a slow build up to this point with the rhetoric coming from the White House, with the propaganda that's coming from the cabinet. We have the federal authorities giving a take on what happened moments after it happened. No one, nowhere involved in law enforcement would ever do that. You always follow the facts. You always start with a full investigation. And as we've heard, a lot of times the facts will speak for themselves before we jump to a conclusion. But in this instance, and in all the instances involving this White House, especially this second term, it's been more aggressive, more propaganda, and really using ICE as the arm of Donald Trump. It's quite eerie when you think about the Gestapo and how that was used back in Nazi Germany. So these agents are operating outside of their skill set. A lot of times they only need 45 days of training to become certified officers under their training policies. Just think about that for 1 second. You can't get a degree. You can't get a diploma. You can't get most certifications in a month and a half. And that's what we have here. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing sloppy police work. We're seeing intimidation. And it's quite alarming.
There's no question, my brother. But let me ask you this, though. So both of you guys provided, you know, obviously great data, and you know, we saw this coming, and lack of training, and you know, 32 people have been killed and all that type stuff. I want to get to, and I'll start with you, Keith. How did you feel when you saw it, right? Forget all the other stuff, but as a human, how did you feel?
I was angry. I think a lot of us were angry. And it takes a lot to make me angry in this context because of what I do. We look at police reports every day. We look at autopsies. We hear the worst of the worst. Nobody calls a defense attorney when things are good. But this in and of itself is appalling. You have Mr. Pretty, who is literally holding up a phone. He is in a peaceful stance. He never takes a defensive stance. He's shot in the back. Okay, so that in and of itself in courtrooms all across this country negates self-defense 99% of the time, because it has to be an imminent threat. And we'll get more into that a little later on. But
right.
The emotions that I felt were so visceral. And then you hear the administration and the gaslighting that goes on to not believe your lying eyes. That is where you have a general consensus among many reasonable-minded Americans who might disagree on politics, and they see this, and it looks like murder. It sounds like murder, and it feels like murder.
Right. Mark, real quick, feelings, my brother.
Yeah, I mean, angry definitely was the first feeling. And then there were so many mixed things, right, especially the outrage after the fact of the lying. I mean, I don't know how much more I could add to that, right? Because to first see what happened and then be in a position where now they're telling you, oh, that's not what happened, and every camera angle was showing it. How am I supposed to feel when I'm like, well, I saw what happened. This is a pattern that's been happening more and more. And then for you to lie to me and tell me that I'm not believing, you know, not to believe my own eyes and not to believe every camera angle, it's appalling. It's also disrespectful. I don't like when people play in my face. So it's like they're literally playing in our faces and saying, this is not, you know, this is not what you see. And we clearly see it. So I feel disrespected, as much as angry, as much as saddened that it happened, as much as that deep-seated, you know, and I don't even know if it's rage, but like the deep-seated, like, we know this was going to happen. We've been here before. And it's the disappointment in the moment that it's happening, right? The disappointment at the fact that we're seeing it, we're witnessing it. I think it was a lot of mixed things there, and just kind of coming in waves as you hear more news, you hear more evidence, you keep connecting it. We keep looking back. We think about, like, we found out about Keith Porter as, you know, soon before that. Right. So we're thinking like, OK, wow, so much is coming up. I can't help but feel all these mixed areas, all these mixed emotions.
Right. Right. So I look, let's be fair, though. Right. I think the majority of people felt that. And so let's dive into it, because here's the thing. And you guys both spoke about, you know, a lot of the things from an emotional standpoint that made us angry. Obviously, Alex, you know, was shot and killed. But then all the things that happened after to make it even, you know, just insult of your intelligence, right? And then it also makes you feel like, well, if you lying about this in this video, and you still lie, and you lying, all right, what else has gone on without the video that you've come up in front of in a press conference and said, this person did this, this person did. See, that's the issue, okay? I mean, there's a lot of issues, but you're lying, right? And we got video, all right? It's like Eddie Murphy back in the day said, it wasn't me, okay? So, yeah. But let's dive in, right? Now, look, let's set the table because, you know, you never know. Some people, what are you talking about? Whatever the case may be. Plus, we want to hear from you. Those who are watching want to hear your comments. What do you think? What do you feel as we dive into this, right? But Preddy, U.S. citizen, ICU nurse, licensed firearm owner. So let's be clear here.
Yes.
He had a permit to carry, okay? And he was basically out to film, as everybody in that neighborhood was doing, okay? Filming ICE because of all the things that they were doing, going back to your Gestapo tactics, you know, grabbing people in schools and churches, you know, going up to people's houses, banging on their door, mm-hmm. telling them they're going to come back for their family, you know, all these things, right? That, and then there's no recourse. They can do whatever they want to do. People ain't got rights. So they're filming so they can create a paper trail, a video trail of what's happening. So he's out there doing that, right? And then obviously, as we dive in, you know, he's out trying to protect people. But one of the things, though, about it, when this happened, because I remember I was sitting at the house Saturday, and you see these little headlines that come up. And they say, ICE kills a man. And immediately before they even the press conference, they start framing it. Our attorney's like, this person was a domestic terrorist, blah, 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 blah. But let's dive into what we were told first before we got into it.
At 9:05 a.m. Central Time, the Department of Homeland Security law enforcement officials and officers were conducting targeted operations in Minneapolis against an illegal alien whose criminal history included domestic assault with intentionally inflicting bodily harm, disorderly conduct, and driving without a valid license. An individual approached U.S. Border Patrol officers with a 9mm semi-automatic handgun. The officers attempted to disarm this individual, but the armed suspect reacted violently. Fearing for his life and for the lives of his fellow officers around him, an agent fired defensive shots. Medics were on the scene immediately and attempted to deliver medical aid to the subject, but he was pronounced dead at the scene. The suspect also had 2 magazines with ammunition in them that held dozens of rounds. He also had no ID. This looks like a situation where an individual arrived at the scene to inflict maximum damage on individuals and to kill law enforcement.
It's just a joke. And when you say something like he violently approached and you use these very charged words, no credibility. That's a big word in court. No credibility. We don't believe anything that she says. We throw the baby out with the bathwater because you are blatantly lying. And then now the conservatives are now pointing out the fact that he had a gun. Hold on. I thought we worshiped the NRA. I thought we can carry a gun wherever we want because that's our Second Amendment right. Right. And so now at this point in time, that argument has been flipped on its head, but it goes to show there's no intellectual curiosity. There's no stability with this administration. They are going to say and do whatever they have to try to spin this narrative. And that's why, Tony, they came out so quickly. They wanted to spin the narrative before people could really take a look at it because you have so many outlets with feeding us news. I think they're trying, and effectively to their base, trying to basically spin this so that the first time you hear it is their version. They don't want an objective version because you can't want an objective version when you're characterizing something before the full investigation has even taken place.
Correct. You know, here's the thing, though, too, is that at the end of the day, yes, let's get our narrative out. But that's not typically how things work. okay? Typically, when these situations happen, and law enforcement, especially the executive, the head of the agency, usually comes out and says, hey, something's happened, right? And we're getting all the facts. And we're not going to say anything until we get the facts. And then we'll come back. We got body cam footage, all this type of stuff. But to your point, they came out immediately and said this was the case. Now, let's be fair. When they came out and said this, Mark, okay, when they came out and said it, and I don't know where, I think when you and I chatted, you said you was watching this all day long, right? So when you first saw this, before you saw, and I, did you see this first or did you see
actually,
the video first?
I saw this after, so I knew she was lying when I saw that.
Okay, so you saw, so okay. I saw this first. What about you, Keith? Did you see the announcement first or did you see the video first?
I saw the video first, and when I saw her come on TV, I just walked out the kitchen because I already know what she was going to spin it. And then I got the summary, and then I had the nerve to watch it later. I was just too upset because,
yeah, bro.
You know, I know what self-defense looks like in real life.
So know, here's the thing.
It's hard to watch.
I saw her first, okay? Because, again, we all get alerts on our phone, and Wall Street Journal said, another shooting in Minneapolis, okay? And then I saw this first, okay, to be fair. Because I was doing stuff and trying to get ready for the storm that was coming in, and me and my daughter was out shopping and all that type of stuff, right? I saw that. Then we came home. Then I saw the video. Then I was like, what? Right? So bald-faced lie. Now, but let's do this, man, because, you know, we're sitting here, we're talking because, but let's break this down, right? So let's go to the next level, okay? Let's go to... That's what she came out and said. Okay? Now, you just said it earlier. Acting violently, carrying a magazine, pointed a weapon at the officers. All right? Came to do maximum damage. Okay? And then they even threw in he didn't have no ID. Like, that's a... I don't even know why that's part of the narrative. All right. So, but they're framing it like this dude, you know, typically when people are coming to kill a lot of people, they don't have ID on them, right? They don't want to know, you know, so they're trying to be stealth, right? Now, but let's see exactly what happened. And what I'm going to do here, because, and for everybody who's with us, if, you know, this makes you queasy, you just want to be, you know, sensitive. What we're about to show is some you know, content that could make you feel uncomfortable. So if it does, please look away, right? But we're going to break this down, and I'm going to stop it, okay, as we go through to get you guys' perspectives. Sounds like a plan?
All right.
CBS News Homeland Security correspondent Nicole Skanga shows us exactly what led up to the moment the federal agent pulled the trigger, killing Preddy. But first, a warning, some of the images you're about to see are disturbing.
About 2 minutes before the shooting, Alex Preddy is seen arguing with officers. One officer pushes him back, and an individual is detained as Preddy's argument with officers continues. Preddy, holding a cell phone, was allegedly there as an observer to document what was happening. About a minute later, Preddy is seen standing in the street, filming, directing a car past him. An officer then approaches another apparent observer and pushes her. She moves to Preddy and holds him by the waist, and the officer approaches and pushes Preddy. A second woman walks over. The officer pushes her to the ground, then sprays Preddy with a chemical irritant. Preddy raises his hands to block the spray. Preddy and the first woman then move to assist the woman who is knocked down, and the officer continues to spray. Several more officers arrive and drag Preddy onto the ground. An officer in gray reaches into the struggle and comes out holding a gun that appears to match a photo of a gun released by the Department of Homeland Security. In this video, obtained by CBS News, you can clearly see the gun being removed from Preddy's waist by the officer. The first shot is fired about 1 second later. Slowed to a quarter speed, you can see and hear how quickly the shot follows the gun's removal. In another angle, you can see an agent watch as the gun is removed from Preddy's waistband before the agent pulls his own gun and fires at the kneeling Preddy. The officers move away from Preddy as at least one of them continues to fire. Preddy does not appear to be moving. Around 10 shots are fired in total by law enforcement. After approximately 45 seconds, at least one officer eventually moves in and kneels next to Preddy.
Yeah, it's just even worse than what I remembered. Like, it's even worse than I remember. Like, this poor man was really trying to help. At no point was he the aggressor. At no point. He has a First Amendment right to protest, to peaceably assemble. He was trying to be a good Samaritan to somebody who had been shoved by the officer. So that's assault.
Buddy, so stop right there, right? Because that's the part that drives me crazy, is that at the end of the day, he's holding a cell phone up, right? And he talked to the officer, and then the ICE agent went away and pushed the woman. Pushed the woman. And then he put himself in there to try to save the woman. Now, Mark, I mean, anybody, if that was your girlfriend, your wife.
What good man wouldn't all do right? that?
Who wouldn't do that?
You would do that.
Right? Even if it was the police. And the police pushed your wife to the ground like a dog. All right? You ain't gonna do nothing?
Especially if you see that she's not the aggressor.
Exactly. Right? And now here's the other thing, though, too. Is that at the end of the day, he pulls up. So he's trying to get the woman, take care of her. First, he steps to him like, what are you doing? And he's holding her. They pepper spray him, okay?
And he puts his hand up.
And then, but that's my point. They pepper spray him, and that should have been good enough,
right?
Okay? But right. They don't do that. Go ahead, Mark.
I'm saying, like, they pushed to him. That ISIS
they grabbed him.
Towards him. So now they pushed both women, pushed him, sprayed him in the face with pepper spray, and when he's trying to help her up, the ICE officer moved towards them. So that's the issue. If you were in any act of self-defense, you would move back. Right? You would try to remove yourself from the situation. But you didn't. You aggressed towards them. And that's the problem. And if it were on, we have to think about this. If it were on camera, right? If it didn't happen in this protest, in this place, how would we, that narrative that we would have heard would have been the primary thing. And that's ridiculous.
Well, let's go to that, right? So, Keith, you know, you're a criminal defense attorney. Like you said, you've been practicing law. You're a rising star. You're one of the top 100 trial attorneys in the country. When you see how Noam came out, so number one, as an attorney, did anything that she said match the video?
The fact that Mr. Preddy was killed.
Yeah, anything that the DHS
that's
secretary.
That's the only thing.
No. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. Go ahead.
No.
That's, what did you say?
That's the only thing that she said that was true is that this unfortunate murder happened. Everything else that she said was propaganda. Because at the end of the day, the officers escalated it at every step in this process. The man has his phone. He's not approaching anybody. He gets pushed. He backs up. Someone else gets pushed. He goes over to try to help. He gets sprayed. I've seen cases where people get pepper spray and they start wailing, right? It's just a reaction. He gets sprayed. That stuff is not like putting shampoo in your eyes, okay? That stuff is meant to subdue. He puts his hands up and he is still forced to the ground. And why are 10 shots fired? Think about that for a second. 10 shots. And the pivotal moment, I think, in this whole situation is that we have a victim of a crime who they can't dig up his past. They can't spin their propaganda to make it seem like he was a gang member or he was some professional agitator. This is a man who worked for the VA serving veterans, someone who had no criminal history and was a lawful gun owner. So that is what the American people see. And those are the undisputed facts in this case. And also they disarmed him. So it has to be an imminent threat of death or serious bodily injury. in order for self-defense in 50 states to be applicable. You can't start the fight and then pull out your gun and say, hey, I was acting in self-defense. And that's essentially what we have.
Right, right. It seems like, too, that one of the officers pulled the gun away. And this goes into the lack of training. Because typically when you pull the gun away, you're supposed to say, I got the gun, I got the gun.
I got it,
right? And evidently, once he pulled it away, the other officer just started blasting, right? And so, so here's the thing, though. That shows you the lack of humanity. That shows you that you got goons, okay? You don't have people that's trying to de-escalate. You don't have people that's trying to make sure that there's not a loss of life, anything like that. They immediately start blasting. And to your point, and again, I don't know if the one officer shot 10 times, but it seems like it was two or three of them that was shooting off rounds, right? When they already pulled the gun out. See what I'm saying? So what was that about, right? And he was on his hands and knees, all right? Mm-hmm. And so there was no threat. There was no nothing. But the question I want to ask, and I want to ask you, go back to you on this, Keith, because this is something that a lot of people are not sure. They've been in a situation, nothing like that, but a traffic stop, and they pull out their cell phone, and then they start recording, and then the officer says, put your cell phone away, quit recording. Talk to us a little bit about the legal right to record.
Yeah. You have a legal right to pull out your cell phone and record. It is a public space. It is not constitutionally protected. The officers don't have a right to privacy. A lot of times, though, they will make that command as though that is a lawful command. And in limited instances, if it can be viewed as a weapon, possibly, but in most situations, the officers have no legal standing to demand that you not record them. Quite frankly, many jurisdictions, the officers have body cameras. So what's the big deal? If I record you, you recorded me. So that will not be a legal defense. That will not be something that they can stand by in court, because you don't have to obey an unlawful command. And that's what it was, an unlawful command. And so it doesn't have any merit.
You know, one of the things, so thanks for that. Number two, let's dive into, because they tried to create a narrative and I want to debunk it all. We already debunked that he didn't walk up to them with a gun. Okay. And that's the first thing, right? That's the thing that blew me away, because I saw the statement first. So I'm expecting some guy came out and was like blasting, right? Or at least came out and threatened them. We saw none of that, right? So that was all debunked, right? Now, but he did have the legal right to carry, okay? And so at the end of the day, you know, let's talk about, because, you know, it's kind of funny though, man. You know, and I hate, you know, sometimes we go to this. Number one, you know, everybody's got a right to bear arms. But then we know that, you know, you got people going into churches and schools and they're killing kids and stuff to that nature, right? So at one side, you know, we're saying, hey, we got to try to get rid of some of these, at least the AR-15s, the assault rifles and stuff to that nature, right? But then at the same time, okay, we're saying you got a right to carry arms. Okay. So it's like, to be fair, we do straddle that line depending on what happens. Even though the constitutional right, you have a right to bear arms. Okay. But let's be fair. People straddle that, right? Because before the NRA, when somebody went in, like right here in Connecticut, and we had, you know, I don't know, back in 2013, guy came in and killed like, you know, 20, 30 kids. Okay. I'm talking elementary school kids.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Sandy Hook. Thank you, my friend. And then at the end of the day, you know, everybody, that's what, and I'm not saying that's when, because you had Columbine before that. But what I'm saying is it was a big thing about we got to get rid of. And then you had the NRA come out and be like, no, you know, blah, 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 blah. And this and that. Right. And so they were a staunch, you know, advocate of the Second Amendment. And then people hated the NRA when you think of it from that point of view, from that perspective. But then here, okay, the NRA comes out because my man they tried to paint a narrative that he came to a protest with a gun, and you shouldn't do that. But to be fair, let's even go back. Was it Charlottesville or whatever, when the dude, was it Rittenhouse or Wittenhouse, when he came running down the thing when they had a protest with an AR-15 and he ended up shooting somebody and then got off?
Yes, he walked in the street with the AR-15.
All right. You didn't hear that, don't bring a gun to a protest. You didn't hear that then, right? But you hear it. They defended him, and he got off, okay? He got off. But in this situation, they were looking to create a narrative to back up their tactics, all right? And then they, like you said, they gaslighted us. So, Mark, the one thing I want to go to you on this is, and I'll come back to you on Keith, let's talk about, you know, our constitutional protections. You know, on one hand, you're saying we have the right for free speech. We have the right to bear arms. We have the right for this. Mm-hmm. But then when it doesn't fit your narrative or what you're trying to do, you would throw. And hold on. And this is the government. So what I was saying earlier is that typically people straddle both sides. Right. Here's the government ready to throw that out of the window, because they want to substantiate why they did what they did. Let me hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah. I mean, first we have to consider this government and like this administration and these supporters versus what we would constitutionally say is sound, right? Because we can see violation after violation come with no care in the world. So even though the Constitution, and again, I think a lot of people misunderstand it, that is the government's limitations on what they can do against like our Constitution. So our constitutional right to free speech, government can't ban certain levels of free speech. But we know there are laws that ban certain levels of free speech. So I think that straddling has shifted significantly, because now it went from common sense policy and laws around governing weapon usage for and weapon ownership with the Second Amendment, common sense policies around navigating free speech, freedom of religion, where you can practice, where you can't, to now it's an ideologically driven element. So when I say I have my constitutional right to free speech, somebody who disagrees with me will then try to disparage first, like they might look at the color of my skin and say, well, right. And we can also recognize, look at the color of our skin. We haven't always had the constitutionally protected right to free speech. We haven't always had the constitutionally protected right to bear arms. So in that case, we have to put in context, not just what the Constitution says and how we enforce it, but we have to look at who are the people in charge and recognize that they themselves are also supposed to be the enforcers. So we're in a unique position, because if they change how they purport that the Constitution or they should hold up and enforce the law, that puts us in a really tricky situation. So they can change the narrative because they know that their supporters won't care about what the rule of law is according to the actual practice. They care that the person that they have determined are enemies or bad get the punishment that's due them regardless of it. And so we see an administration that focuses on the end justifying the means, even though the end is unclear and the means are devastating to the people.
So, Money, thanks for that. Keith, real quick. So can you bring, if you have a firearm, and you have a permit for it, can you bring it to a protest?
Absolutely. You absolutely can. And I would challenge anybody to watch the video. At what point did the ICE agents even know that he has a weapon?
No, but
they don't even know that the man has a weapon. He is being responsible. He has it tucked likely in a holster because it didn't just fall on the ground. They had to pull it out. He was doing everything that we asked people to do, and he still was murdered.
Well, let me ask you this, because we don't know, right? And maybe we'll get some body cam and we'll get, but, you know, one of the things that I always thought, if you have a concealed weapon and you get pulled over, you're supposed to let the officer know that you have a concealed weapon. Is that correct?
It's good form to do so, especially during a traffic stop. I would say this, in the situation we have engage with him to even have a conversation.
What I'm saying is maybe, and we don't know, but maybe when he was on the ground, maybe he was saying, hey, I have a permit. I have this concealed weapon.
Sure.
Just to let them know. So it didn't escalate.
Sure.
Right? Because, you know, sometimes people pat and feel it. They're like, oh, he got a gun. And then, you know, now, you know, so we don't know. Right. We don't know. But that could be. Let me ask you that. Could that be a possibility?
Yeah. So let's say that he is saying, I've got a gun. OK. They see his hands.
No, his hands. Got that. Yeah.
So under no circumstance, I'm not going to say no, because I'm a lawyer and it's always gray. But under most reasonable circumstances, they are going to have a difficult time if state prosecutors are allowed to move forward, which I hope we can get into that too, because this is a state crime.
Well, let's go there.
And so they likely will be stonewalled to some extent, but video footage from a civilian is just as good as the dash camera or body camera footage.
But that's what they're using, though. That the video we just showed you, those are all from cell phones, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it might have been some businesses that had some video as well, but the majority of that is cell phone. And that was the reason that people were out, right? See, here's the thing, man. And I want to get into the state because we need to go there, right? But I got to say this. We spoke about it, but we didn't dive into it, right? The bottom line is this. If it wasn't no video, we would have saw that narrative and that would have been it.
Over.
Okay? That would have been it. And so I go to, if you're doing that when there's video, what have you done? What lies have you already told about people that got arrested? And they're quick to throw up somebody who's brown or black on the screen, because that's the poster child when they think of illegal aliens. Okay, but we know there's white people from Europe that's here illegally. You don't see their pictures, all right? You don't see none of that. But the reason you don't is because if you have brown and black people, and if that's their picture, that creates some type of response. You see my point here? It's all a strategy. Look, at the end of the day, it's a strategy. Okay, but back to the government. If they're lying to you in your face with a video, okay, what else are they lying to you about when there is no video? So basically, we know if there wasn't for the cell phones, if it wasn't for those people actually doing why they were out there to do, because they knew some stuff like this would happen, we wouldn't be talking about this today. We would have ran with that narrative, would have been ran with, and then they would have dug up some other stuff on him to discredit him and call him and said he was radicalized and all these other things that they say when they try to discredit somebody to substantiate what they do. But let's go back to, so real quick, thoughts on that before we go to the state stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. Like, it's when we think about the history of how they use media narrative to shape one, and that's extended all the way back to, you know, creating the lowest level and making sure everything devolves back to them, right? So I think you are absolutely clear in focusing in on, okay, how are they trying to get around this? Because you can't pin it on, you know, putting up a brown person or a black person. You can't pin it on this really bad history, this shady background that again, you're not digging up anything. So you have to then think about what's the next radical thing that people who would hear us will respect and will rally with us on. And that's this like domestic terrorism they're throwing around. That's the he was lunging and dangerous and this and anti, you know, he was coming for the law enforcement officers, because that means that this person is now the closest thing to dangerous that I would imagine in my head. Therefore, I'm going to have a negative response, right? And if I have a negative response, I'm going to support their work and I'm going to continue to support their work. And then we also have to remember, the clips that they're putting aren't for us. They're for their followers.
But that's right? The point. That's the point. And here's the thing, though, too. The reason I brought that up, because, and I just showed the one clip of the DHS secretary, but her right-hand person, I forget his name, Bovino, I think it was. Okay. So he rolled out the same statement. So, all right, he said the same statement, but he went one step further. He was saying we were trying to arrest this illegal criminal. And then he said his picture is up on the wall. And then they show. And again, I told a brown dude, Elinkulus and whatever his name was. Right. So, again, they didn't even have to do that. They didn't have to show no pictures. They didn't have to do that. But that was on purpose. OK, because let me show you who we were going after. All right. And so substantiate why we shot him, because he got in the way of us trying to get this person. Okay. But real quick, Reggie just put up on, I'm going to put his comment back up. And there's a question before we go to the state stuff. He says, as a collective, what do we do now? Keith, let me hear your thoughts.
Well, we have to pay attention. We can't let Trump keep distracting us. He throws so much chaos that there is such a natural tendency, I find myself doing it, to just kind of tune it out because it's so negative and it's so infuriating. But we really have to draw attention to this with organizing, but also just holding their feet to the fire when it comes to the political process. I believe that we will have a divided Congress here towards the end of this year. And I think that a lot of things that are rubber stamped now will change with the political process, but not totally. I'm not naive to that. But people have to know their rights. And also, you have to be able to put yourself in the shoes of your neighbor. And that's what this gentleman did. It cost him his life, but he'll always be remembered as a result. He'll live forever as a result. But you have to be able to put yourself in the shoes of your neighbor, because the Trump administration is betting that you're going to look at them as other. They're betting that the Somalia community in Minneapolis has nothing to do with someone in New York City that's African-American or a suburban mom in North Atlanta. That's what they're betting on. And the community of Minneapolis, these people have really stood up to the federal government. Mr. Pretty was an ICU nurse, probably well-educated, good job. He didn't have to be out there in sub-zero temperatures. Right. He was doing that to try to love his neighbor as he loved himself. And that's what we have to keep doing. I know it sounds cliche, but that's what we have to keep doing. Don't let these people divide us, because that's a man that has a mom and a dad and is human and deserves dignity and respect.
Absolutely. Mark, what do we do as a collective? You want to add on to that?
Yeah, just to add on, I think it's something I've been sharing just with other people I've conversed about, and is do what you can, right? I think some people will be protesting. Some people will be policy driven. Some people will be recording. Some people will be feeding people. Some people will be bailing people out. Some people, right? There's going to be somebody doing something. So I always say, don't look to do the biggest thing. Do something, right? Because I think when people get into a moment of fear, we tend to do nothing, right? You tend to do nothing. You clam up. Or you think you have to go and do the biggest, most bodacious thing possible. And it's like, no, sometimes it's that moment of organizing, is that moment of, you know, connecting with community. Donate if you're in a place where you have the funds. And I know money's tight because, you know, the economy is tight. But if you're in a place that you have it, donate, volunteer somewhere. The biggest thing that we have to do is rehumanize our neighbors, right? We have seen the last 10 plus years of the dehumanization of people. Longer than that, of course, you know, I'm not going to go into the deep history, but let's focus on this, on the last, right? We've seen the full dehumanization, and it was a chip, and we saw it through the first level of the administration, and then when Biden was president, it was in the background a little bit more, right? They started doing as much as possible to break us up and divide us, starting with little things and then attacking whole communities by the end of it. During the election, we saw him attacking whole communities. We knew exactly what was happening. So when I say do what you can, that's my advice. Do what you can. Find a way to either get involved, support involvement, or help those who were involved, right? Because that's, you know, that's a powerful way, in an unseen way, to help move this work forward and keep the pressure up to hold this administration accountable, and then hold whatever follows after this accountable to that same thing.
So, you know, Mark, I love what you said, because you definitely broaden exactly what people can do. Because a lot of times they think, you know, I don't want to go out and protest in the cold weather. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do this. There's a ton of stuff that you can do, right? The one thing, though, I just want to back up to what Keith said, because I to me, that's the biggest thing, is stay informed. Okay, is really educating yourself and stay on top of what's happening. And back to the chaos strategy. The strategy is to throw so many things at you at one time where you say, I can't keep up, and you give up. All right. Mm-hmm. And then you just let, then these things become normal, and then they can just slide them right past you, because now you're not aggressive. You're not saying, we can't do that. We got to push back on that, because there's so many things. And I get it. You got family you got to take care of. So I get it. But they're betting on that. They're betting that you don't know. That's why they come out and say what they say, because they're expecting the majority of people are not paying attention. They don't know what's going on. They hear sound bites and narratives, and they think that's it. And they'll run by that, right? So you got to stay on top of stuff. You know, you talk about the Somalis, 80,000 Somalis, or 60, 70,000 Somalis live in Minneapolis. There were 80 of them that was involved in this fraud that happened, but they're painting the whole brush that they're all criminals, all right? Yeah. And so when you, but if you just hear that, you start thinking that versus that doesn't make sense, right? So you got to stay involved. You got to stay on top of stuff, because we talk about Gestapo tactics. We talk about all these things. We've seen history before. And why we're so afraid of this turning into that is because the people just basically just like, they ain't gonna do nothing. I don't need to worry about that. Or you guys are worrying about something that'll never happen. And it happened because the people were sitting on their hand. Not everybody, a lot of people were sitting on their hands talking about all they cared about was getting a paycheck. All they cared about was some of these things. And they just let them take over everything else. Does that make sense, my brothers?
They can lull you to sleep. They can lull you to sleep or just give you so much trauma that you want to just get away from it. And you don't want to turn on the news, because what did this man do today? What did he say today? I want to just add real quick, you can also contact your local congressman or woman, senator, because they do have... to vote on the budget here coming up pretty soon. ICE funding is included. I know they already have money set aside. However, a line can be drawn in the sand. There's going to be no further funding. Now, that comes with a political question, because now they're going to tie that to other, you know, programs that are of importance. And so, you know, there can be a showdown over this, especially given... the events of just January. Two citizens have died. We haven't even talked about the first one, where the woman got shot in the face and killed, and then they tried to say that she was using her vehicle as a weapon. I mean, you know, that's how bad it is. We haven't even talked about that, rightfully so, because this is so egregious, but that was egregious too.
Exactly.
And so there's not been any tempering of the behavior. If anything, it's been ratcheted up, and that's the most alarming.
Real quick, my brother, talk real quick about the state stuff, right? Because obviously the federal government has taken over. And let's give an update, too. Now, right now, as of yesterday, Trump's decided to take some of the ICE agents out of Minneapolis. They're now playing three-card Molly, because now their new person, Holman, is now going to be the spokesperson. Noam is now moved off. She didn't get fired, but you know how it goes, right? Yeah. You messed this one up, right? Same with Bovino. They banished him, sent him out of California.
He's gone, right?
But that doesn't mean that the situation is over, okay? And so at the end of the day, talk a little bit quick, because we want to know something needs to happen to the persons that killed Alex Pretty.
Yeah. I can just start real quick and then I'll pass over to Mark. I fully expect charges by the state of Minnesota. They're not going to be intimidated just by the rhetoric of this White House. It's going to start with their own independent investigation. They are most likely not going to get a lot of cooperation from the government as it stands right now, which is totally out of the norm. I have to point that out.
State and local and federal
law enforcement always work together. They're brothering.
But flat out.
But in this instance, no. So I fully expect that this will result in charges being filed. It may not be overnight. It may take some time, but I do suspect that the governmental immunity that they hide behind, that's going to fall, because they were acting beyond the scope of their lawful duties, because they cannot claim that this was part of making a lawful arrest. There was no reason to arrest this man in the first place. No crime was committed. We saw that. And then even
they escalated it.
Exactly. And then if they call it a brief detention, well, guess what? Why are you using deadly force? It's beyond the scope of what a reasonable and lawful objective officer would have done in this situation. And the last point is that the amount of shots that were fired, I think it's the most detrimental fact in this case.
That's flat out.
If I'm looking at it as an attorney, 10 shots? Are you kidding me? You squeeze that trigger 10 times.
Somebody dead. Right? On somebody on the ground. Okay?
Already on the ground.
And you took his gun.
Other grown men are on him, pinning him.
But they had him. They had him.
They had him from the very beginning, because he put his hands up.
They pepper sprayed him.
If you want me here, this is a sign of universal surrender. A 5-year-old knows that. So this is what this man is doing. So I don't expect this to go quietly. And I believe that Minneapolis, which if I recall George Floyd, they are going to use the court system in a way that I think holds these people accountable.
You have to hold them accountable, right? You have to. Let me ask you this. Mark, I want to go to you here. But somebody told me this earlier today, which I didn't know. George Floyd, Renee Good, and Alex Pretty were all within a mile of
Crazy.
Each other. That's insane. That is insane, right? So, Mark, what I want to ask you here is that, you know, especially in the Black community, we've always distrusted the police, okay? You know, they've never, to be fair, just from a historical standpoint, have never given us any reason to trust them. All right? Because we've seen these movies before. Okay? And, you know, sometimes we still live them. Right? However, what's interesting in this situation, the police was the good guys in Minneapolis, and it was the federal government, the ICE people, that was the bad guys, right? Yeah, the Minneapolis police was like, this is horrible. I can't believe they're doing that. And you got to remember, 5 years ago, they were like, defund the police. And now they're like, the Minneapolis police, they're the heroes, right? So it's just, but my point I'm trying to make, Is this going to continue? Will this, because of what ICE is doing, does it take it off the police, in your opinion? Or is it now just broadening the scope when it comes to law enforcement altogether in terms of increasing that distrust, or we can't trust them, or they're out to get us and they'll frame us? What's your thoughts?
I will say, I don't think at any point ICE wasn't included in that.
No. They were included, but now they make the regular police like you know, heroes.
All right. I don't want to celebrate one-upping. But what I will say, is that people, it doesn't matter what community you come from, you want to be safe. Let's just put that out there. I think the challenge that people don't realize is I want to be safe without being profiled. I want to be safe without being stopped on the streets because you suspect it because I have on a certain clothing, right? I want to be, you know, I don't want to be over-policed. I want to be secure if I reach out to you. Those are two vastly different things. And I think that's what we're seeing in this. And, you know, I don't want to look at this and say, you know, we think we're going to see like a pro-law enforcement contingent come out. What we're going to see is that people are like, yes, their responsibility is to keep the people of Minnesota safe. So by them stepping up and doing their job, let's commend them for that. But what we cannot say is that the history of behaviors and the history of profiling and the mistreatment of community members will be ignored. It's about holding people accountable, but while also recognizing the need for something and someone to be there to help keep us safe. And I'll use that in quotes because at the end of the day, we all have to also keep each other safe, right? We cannot rely on law enforcement to keep us safe. And as a people, you know, as Black community members, we know that sometimes if you call the police, one of your fears is that they're going to think I'm the one who's doing the crime.
I did it. I did.
Right. Right. So there is this mixed and difficult relationship that I think is always there. Right. We see it in voting patterns within the Black community. We see it in what we bring up as part of our concerns. Right. Like, we want to be safe, but we don't want to be profiled. And I think that's where it lands, right?
It's interesting you said that, and we'll end it on there, is that that was the administration's narrative the whole time, which didn't match up. We're trying to keep the community safe. And they were done but causing havoc, all right? And two people are dead. A ton of people have been arrested who are U.S. citizens, okay? Their lives have been turned upside down. And so how can you say, see, that's my point here when you talk about the distrust. You're saying we're trying to keep you safe, but you ain't doing nothing but causing chaos. My life ain't no safer after you showed up, okay? Right. So that there is a mental.
Exactly. It doesn't matter, right?
You said you were going to. So look, we're going to have to leave it there. I really appreciate Keith B. Johnson, Mark Jameson, for coming on BEP Live, sharing your perspectives. We love to have you guys come back, okay, at another time to dive into the most crucial and timely topics, provide your thoughts, but really, really appreciate it. Last thought, Keith.
It's going to take good law enforcement officers to hold the bad apples accountable, because this is bad for good officers, because everybody looks at ICE as law enforcement. That's what it's going to take. It's going to take us paying attention and being fearless and standing up to this dictator.
Leave it at that. My man, Keith B. Johnson, Mark Jameson, again, thank you for coming for BEP Live. So what I want to leave everybody today, and it's very important, right? And Keith and Mark framed it well, right? When a citizen can be killed in public and the truth depends on who controls the story, accountability is already under threat. So this isn't, you know, as much as we talk about ideology, it's about whether constitutional rights still protect people when they encounter state and federal power. And more importantly, silence is not neutral here, okay? Because silence is complicity. And if you don't, if this didn't wake you up, this didn't make you, I don't care what side of the aisle you fall on. If this didn't wake you up and say, what the hell is going on? This ain't right. Then you got to check yourself. Okay? You got to check yourself, because I don't care if you're black, white, Jewish, Asian, Indian. It doesn't matter. What we saw is not right. And it should never happen. And as U.S. citizens, this is our constitutional right to stand up against the government and push back. Okay? And so it's time for people to get a pair and grow up and keep moving. Right? So, again, thank you for joining BEP Live. Don't forget, check out the next Need to Know with Dr. Nasinga Burton here on the Black Executive Perspective Podcast Network. Dr. Burton, we should have had her in the mix here, right? Dr. Burton talks about the most timely and crucial topics that's happened. To see her every Thursday, as well as the new show on Black Executive Perspective Podcast Network, A Mixed Executive Perspective, hosted by Grace Foot and Corey. Grace talks about and explores biracial identity, executive leadership, fear, purpose, belonging, giving voice to perspectives that have been too lost, unheard. It's honest and thoughtful. Check out A Mixed Executive Perspective podcast here on the Black Executive Perspective. Now, listen, we had Keith and Mark on, and we dove into something that was horrible. But our goal here on a Black Executive Perspective is to eliminate all forms of discrimination. And how we do that, we ask everybody to jump into our call to action, which is called LESS, L-E-S-S. The L stands for learn. Keith spoke about this a little bit. We want everyone to learn about racial nuances and cultural differences. Because the more you learn about your fellow citizen, your fellow neighbor, the more you can be enlightened. Then after L, you have the letter E, which stands for empathy. Now, since you've learned, you can be more empathetic, because now you can put yourself in their shoes. And then the first S stands for share. As my boy Chris P. Reed says, don't hide it, divide it. Share what you've learned to other people to help them become enlightened. And then the final S stands for stop. We want everyone to stop discrimination as it walks in your path. This is so easy. It is so simple. If you're at the Sunday dinner table with Aunt Jenny and Uncle Joe, and somebody says something inappropriate at the table, instead of sitting there with your mouth open and giggling, you say, Aunt Jenny, Uncle Joe, we don't believe that. We don't say that. And you stop it right there. So if everyone can incorporate less, L-E-S-S, we'll build a more fair, more understanding world. And guess what, my friends? We all will see the change that we want to see, because less will become more. Don't forget to check out a Black Executive Perspective podcast on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. And follow us on our social channels of LinkedIn, X, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram, or Black Exec. For my fabulous burping guest, Keith B. Johnson. I heard that burp, my brother.
It was a cough.
I'm just teasing with you, my man. And my boy, man. Mark Jameson. I'm Tony Tidbit. We talked about it. We fought about it. We dove into it about it. We want everybody to keep learning about it. We want you to strive and thrive about it. We love you. And guess what? We're out.
A Black Executive Perspective.